to live and to inherit Eretz Israel, you have to appoint Dayonic Sherim. That's what Rashi says. Posuk Chof, the second Rashi. Leman Tichye Beyorashto. Kedai Hu Minui HaDayonic. Haksherim Lehach Yoytet Yisrael Lo Shivar Halad Moskva. Which means you become worthy of Eretz Israel, living in Eretz Israel, if you appoint the right Dayonim. Now, the question here is, what does the connection mean? I mean, all the mitzvahs that we are supposed to do in Eretz Israel are obligations that, in a way, our stay in Eretz Israel are conditional upon. What's special about Shoftim v'Shofrim, about the appointment of Dayonim? Secondly, what is the real meaning of the word lichyot, or the word lichyot, leman tichye? What does the tichye really mean? So, the Amek Dovor has the following insight into it. We find in the Gemara the following pirush on the first pasuk of Megillas Rus. Listen to this pasuk. Vayehi bimei shefot ashoftim. Shefot ashoftim, right? Shoftim v'shoftim. Vayehi bimei shefot ashoftim. Vayehi ro'ov bo'oret. And there was a drought, a hunger in the land of Israel. Says the Gemara. Vayehi bimei shefot ashoftim. What is the connection between shefot ashoftim and ro'ov and hunger? Because it was a generation, says the Gemara, ha-shofet es shofto. Shofet es shofto. Shefot ha-shoftim, that usually translated as when the judges were doing their job, that's not how the Gemara translated. The Gemara interprets the statement, vayehi bimei shefot ha-shoftim, as being when the masses became critical of their judges. Vayehi bimei shefot ha-shoftim, when people used to judge their judges. What does it mean, judge their judges? Criticize their judges. In other words, when the system of justice broke down, when there was no respect for Shoftim, the punishment is Ro'ov. Okay? Meaning, if there is no established judicial system, therefore, you can't have a normal economy, and therefore there will be people that will go hungry. Okay? We find a similar insight in the prayers that we say every day. Hoshivo Shofteinu Kevorishono. We ask for judges, for kosher judges, worthy judges. Ve'yo'atzeinu kevatchilo. Finish, that's it. Ve'hoseir mimenu yogoyin vanocho. And God should remove from us yogoyin vanocho. Unhappiness. What does that have to do? I mean, if that's a bracha, so make a special bracha for Yogam Vanocho. Why do we add the bracha for removing Yogam Vanocho, right, in the bracha of Shoftim? What does one have to do with the other? Yogam Vanocho, you find, for instance, in Ritzei V'Chalitzenu, right, in the prayers for Shabbat that we add by the meals. We say like this. Retzei v'chalitzein ha-shem v'chalitzein, right? Seloi se'ei tzoro v'yogoi v'anocho v'yoy menuchoseinu. That on Shabbos, we shouldn't have yogon v'anocho. When do we mention it? When we are eating. So we are begging God. The same way that you gave us food now, we shouldn't have yogon v'anocho in the future. So what is the real meaning behind yogon v'anocho? There shouldn't be a drought. There shouldn't be a lack of food. You see, from here, if we say it in Birchas Hamazon, that obviously tells you that Yogam Vanocho means the sadness that comes upon a person when he has no food, when he doesn't know where the next piece of food is coming from. Right? That's why we mention it in Ritzei V'Chalitzeinu by the meal. So now it makes sense. Hoshivo Shoftinu Kevorishono V'Yo'atzeinu Kevatchilo. If you are going to help us to establish a judicial system with kosher good judges, then what's the blessing? there won't be ra'ov ba'aretz, there will be plenty of food. So you see that there is a very strong connection with the between the establishment of the judicial system and having food in a plentiful way. Okay? So that answers Hoshivo Shokteinu Voserimen Yogomanocho. It's not two different things. One is related to the other. Says the Amik Dovor, this is exactly where we get it from. This is the source for everything. That what? Shoftim v'shoftrim titein lecho. Once you establish a judicial system, like Rashi calls them, dayonim kesherim, then you'll have l'hachayos. This expression, like when a hungry person sees food, the expression is, he's mechaye, like he becomes alive, like all of a sudden he sees it, like he senses his own life. Right? So therefore, that is the expression of having plenty of food, is lehachayos, right? So this is the connection now. The establishment of the judicial system, the correct judicial system, the reward for it is no hunger, no drought, okay? V'oser mimeno yogon v'anocho. This is the source. That's what the Amik Dovor says. Now, in Posuk 21, Chof Aleph, says like this. We're going to go back to the Posuk before, but it's connected to what I'm saying now. Lo yisita lecho ashero kol eitz. Eitzel mizbach Hashem Elokecho. You are not allowed to plant an ashero. What is an ashero? An ashero is a tree that used to be used for idol worship purposes. That's an ashero, right? The Gemara talks about the prohibition of using atzei asher, allowed to use the wood of an asher. It's idol worship. It's avodah zorah. You're benefiting yourself from avodah zorah. So you're not allowed to plant an ashero, or, like the Mefarshim learned, or kol eitz, eitz al mizbach Hashem Elokecho. Next to the mizbeach, in the Arabais, you're not allowed to plant any trees at all. Right? And in general, don't plant an ashero. As the Gemara, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, what is the connection between shoftim v'shotrim, titelecho, the establishment of the judicial system, and planting an ashero? Answers the Gemara, Omar Reish Lokish, kol hamemane shoifet sheino hogun or dayon sheino hogun, if you establish a judicial system with the wrong people, it's the same as planting an ashero. That's what we learn now. You know, of course, it's very, very difficult. Fine, I mean, it still doesn't answer anything, because really, what does one have to do with the other? Fine, the Torah puts it together, but what is the lesson of it? What does it mean that appointing judges that are not worthy of being judges is the same as planting an asherah? What's the idea behind it? So, in the Mefarshim, it says like this. The whole idea of asherah, right? It's interesting, there are many avodah zorahs in the world. What does the asherah mean more than the god of the wind or bowing down to something else, to an image of something else? What does the asherah represent? Asherah really represents the totality of the forces of nature. Why? Because the same way that the tree draws from the earth, from everything, and it develops, and it fruits come out. That is the worship of nature in general. That is what Asherah is all about. Nature. The worship of nature in general is expressed with the worshipping of trees, because by the growth of the trees, you see nature in action. Nature giving what it has to give. Okay, that is what Asherah is. You worship nature. Now, we in Torah see a special meaning in the worship of nature. It's not like all avodah zorahs. There is more of a danger. For instance, you can bow down to the sun. But what is the meaning of bowing down to nature, or something that represents nature in general? The idea is the following. In nature itself, there is absolutely no justice. Nature in itself is no built-in justice, which means like this. In nature, the strong one, right? The lion will kill a weaker animal. Meaning, in the jungle, right? The law of the jungle is the survival of the fittest. That is the law of the jungle. Now, in nature, the fittest survive, and the weakest disappear. That is the law of nature. That is the complete opposite of tzedek. The whole idea of tzedek is to overcome the law of the jungle, the law of nature, of the survival of the fittest. Right? In other words, the law of tzedek, the idea of tzedek, is to hold back the law of nature. Yeah? The whole idea of tzedek is that the law of nature, where the strong one wins over the weak one, does not apply among human beings. Among human beings, there is a higher concept. There is a concept of tzedek that overcomes the survival of the fittest. Yes? If so, there is a direct symbolic contradiction between the worship of Asherah and tzedek, and the appointment of Dionysus. It is the exact opposite. You hear? If we accept that the worshipping of Asherah is the worshipping, the identifying with nature, right? It's the identification with the law of nature, which is the survival of the fittest, right? The superiority of the strongest. That is the law of nature. Right? Therefore, tzedek establishes the opposite of Asherah. So now the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the statement of Reish Lakish, of course, is understood clearly. If you establish a system with the wrong Dayonim, right, so what is going to come back within among human beings? The further away you are from tzedek, the closer you are going to become to the jungle, to the law of nature, to Asherah. So if you are Memane, if you appoint the wrong judge, you are planting an Asherah. It's not just a statement that he's making. He's just telling you an insight into the nature of justice. The nature of justice is to stop the strong one to step all over the weak one. Right? And if you take a look, really, in the Mizmor of Yom HaShlishi, right? We say like this, Mizmor Le'osot, Elohim nitzo badaskel, deker Elohim ishpot, which means the justice that man establishes, it's a God-like characteristic. You know, it's a divine characteristic. It's called Elohim. In other words, judges, the sitting judgment, have a koyach of Elohim. They are called Elohim in the Torah, right? Right? Says the also, at musay tishpet ovel, right? Ufnei Rishon Tisusel Selo. Onur Oni Borosh Hatziku. So what is the thing? When will be the day that you will stick up for the weaker one? So what is he criticizing? The establishment of Dayonim, right? Who follow the law of the jungle, that the stronger one will always win. In other words, when we criticize a wrong system of justice is when we don't give enough rights to the weak one, the Oni, the Rosh. Okay? Now, that is what tzedek is all about. Tzedek is to equalize the weak one, that he should be able to be judged at the same level as the strong one. And that is when tzedek occurs. That is the exact opposite of Asherah. Now, however, in the Sheni Shmuel, he sees the whole parsha here of Shoftim v'Shofrim being spoken in two levels. He says that, of course, the Pshutoi Shel Mikro is accepted, of course. Hashem is advising, or Moshe Rabbeinu is telling us how to establish Shoftim. But there is in it an advice for each person in particular. So Shoftim v'Shofrim means the following. Shoftim v'Shofrim titen lecho b'chol she'orecho, says the Shemi Shmuel, a person has five gates. His five senses are the five gates through which all information from the outside world comes into him. He senses, he sees, he smells, he touches, he tastes, he hears, right? Those are the gates, the Chol Shorecho. So he says like this. The main obligation of all human beings is that they should not be fooled by their gates, by their senses. You have to put judges by everything that you sense and think, what I am sensing, is that the real truth? Because senses are very distorted. That's how he says. And this is why he goes on to say, if you really pay attention, you see five statements concerning judges. He says, for instance, Shoftu Mishpat Sedek, right? Loi Sate Mishpot, Loi Sakir Ponim, Loi Sikach Shoichai, Sedek Sedek Tirdoi, five pieces of advice. Why five? Because it relates to the five gates. And since we have five senses, those are the five gates. It says like this. This teaches us that the main task of a human being is to get rid of our negias, of our lack of objectivity. Right? Now, the main job of a Jew is to gain a certain degree of objectivity, not to be fooled by your senses. That is objectivity. It's like this. What is the opposite of being objective? Being subjective. Being subjective really means that you, the person himself, becomes the center of his own life. Becomes the center of his own life. Now, in reality, Avodah Zarah is really Avodas Atzmoy. It's a very interesting insight that it's like a recurring theme you find in the Shem Mishmor. That in reality there is one of the two. Either you worship Hashem or you worship yourself. There is nothing in between. Avodah Zarah is really Avodas Atzmoy. Why? Just think about it. When would you worship an idol? For instance, you want rain. You want success. You want food. So you want to relate to the God of rain, and you do whatever the God of rain wants you to do in order to satisfy the God of rain, and you do it. The concept of good and evil doesn't even come into consideration. The idea is appeasement. How can I appease the God of rain? In other words, what buttons can I push that the God of rain should do my will? So what is idol worship? Self-worship. Right? I mean, there is no basic difference between worshipping an idol or worshipping yourself. You are the center of the world. Your will, your desire controls your life to the point that if the God of the sun will want human sacrifice, you will do it, right? Why not? I mean, you are only interested in the appeasement of those powers. As opposed to that system, there is another system. A system where our job, our desire is not relevant at all. The main thing is what Hashem wants. That is a God-centered world. Right. So, it's one of the two. Either we are going to live in a God-centered world or in a man-centered world. Idol worship is just one of the many ways that man-centered world is established. That's all. I mean, it's one of the two. Okay? Now, according to him, for instance, if you believe in science, right, science will solve all human problems. There is no basic difference between that and Avodah Zarah, meaning eventually science will fulfill all my desires. That's what I'm saying. You know, the idea of Avodah Zarah, right, lies in that statement, like real Avodah Zarah. It's the same thing, really, ideologically.
Shouldn't it be also done for Panasa or Rafua then? I mean, that's a selfish thing.
All right, okay. So let me just tell you one thing. Are you allowed to make your doing a mitzvah conditional to, okay, Hashem, I'll put on tefillin, but with one condition, that I should pass the test. Right? Shouldn't do it. Shouldn't do it. Right? The advice is, don't do it. There is only one exception to that. But as a rule, you are not allowed to do it. You know the one exception to it? What?
Meiser.
Right. Meiser. Meiser, tzedoke, Meiser or all tzedokes, really. All tzedokes, charities, you are allowed to make conditions. You know, you're allowed to say, if somebody's sick, okay, I'll give you money, right? But that only if he gets well. You're allowed to do it. That's the only one you're allowed to say, okay, Hashem, I'll give miser, but make sure that I'll be rich. You're allowed to say that. You're allowed to say that. And you're allowed to test God. You say, let's see, okay, this year I'm going to give, but let's see if I make it next year. You're allowed to test God. That's the only test. And that, of course, requires an explanation, because the rule is you're not allowed to test God at all. Right? So there is an explanation why by tzedokah, right, by beinodom, by helping, tzedokah lav dafka, it's any beinodom the chaveroi, that you're allowed to do it. But as a rule, you're not allowed to. Now, in the mitzvahs beinodom lamokon, you are never allowed to make it conditional. You are not allowed to make a condition with Hashem, I'll keep Shabbos, but only if. Not allowed to. Right? That's the rule. Praying is something else completely. Praying is never conditional, just the opposite. The idea of prayer, according to Chazal, you know what it is? Obviously, Hashem, the reason why you didn't give me money is in order that I should become closer to you by asking you for money. So please give me money. Yes, I did. That's the way Chazal saw the idea of prayer. Chazal saw the idea of prayer as an opening that Hashem gives you to become closer to him. How, you know, it's like the king who loves very much, say, one of his subjects, wants the subject to become very close to him, so what does he do? Next time he does something bad to him. That he should be able to come and ask him, so then they will become friendly, and that's what he wants. That's how Chazal see it. In other words, tefillah is l'shem Hashem. In other words, of course, Hashem, you want me to ask you for it, so here, I'm asking you for it. That is the perfect way of tefillah, for the sake of Hashem, not for the sake of myself. There is more, you know, they say the name of the Chofetz Chaim, that a person sometimes can waste his tefillah on a sack of potatoes. That's what he used to say, right? God, you know, you don't, instead of really benefiting from tefillah, right, you waste it for a sack of potatoes. Fine, so Hashem gives you a sack of potatoes, but that's what tefillah is all about. The idea is that use the sack of potatoes to become closer to Hashem. Otherwise, you didn't really fulfill the idea, the goal of tefillah. Okay. So, says the Shem Yishmuel, that this is really the pshat over here. The connection between Shoftim v'Shotrim and Lo Sita Lechoa Sheiro is the following. The idea of Shoftim v'Shotrim is the establishment of the fact that man is not the center of the world. Right? By saying, put judges and guards in front of your gates, and saying, don't take yourself too seriously. Be objective. Objectivity means having Hashem as the center of your life, right? So, what about if you assign the wrong judges? What does it mean, assigning the wrong judges? It means that you fool yourself. Meaning, you start just saying, no, it's okay, I'm doing it l'shem shemaim, and really you are doing it for your own sake. That's putting the wrong judges, right? What will come out of it? That's planting an asherah, that's avodah zarah, that's self-service, right? That's self-worship, that is the avodah zarah about. That's how the Shem Yishmuel sees the connection between avodah zarah and assigning, appointing the wrong judge. So I'll tell you one more insight into the statement, tzedek kirbah. Which problem? Chazal talking about what is the repetition? Tzedek kirbah. So there is the Gemara in Sanhedrin Lamed Bey says, well, tzedek kirbah, it means the following. What about if the judges, according to the technicalities of the case, see that A is right, but they sense that it's a din merume. Din merume means that there is something wrong. Either the witnesses were paid up. I mean, you can say it. You have no proof. Technically, the case is 100% correct, but you sense that it's wrong. That's called din merume. So, the judges could say, listen, it's none of my business. Right? I'll get my salary for just following the technicalities of the case. I'll say, A is right. Tzedek tirdoy, don't do it. Right. Then the second tzedek tells you should be careful even for din merume. This is the Gemara in Sanhedrin Lamed Bey. The problem It's the word tirdoif. What does the word tirdoif mean? Pursuing. What does it mean pursuing? I mean, why use the word? Why use the metaphor of like running after? What does it mean running after justice? What is a roif then? A pursuer. Right? Meaning a person who pursues somebody else in order to kill him. It's called a roif. Now, what's wrong with a roif? It's a roif. Basically, what's wrong with a roif is what makes him become a roif usually is correct. For instance, I don't know, you did something wrong, right? You killed a relative of mine. Or whatever. Or I think you did something. So I run after you. I pursue you. I become a roif. But I am wrong. I really should have bitochen that Hashem will take care of it. If I would be right, I wouldn't be called a roif. Now, I am called a roif because I take the law into my own hands at the point where I should already transfer it to Hashem. You hear? You are called a roif when you cross over the line of bitochen. Meaning, there is a line of bitochen. A very difficult line to define, but there is such a line. Meaning, a person who says, I'm not going to work. If Hashem has to take care of me, I don't have to worry about it. He has gone too far to one direction. What about the other way? Like the Choyves Halvovoy says, a person has to work. But what about if that work involves that he should travel all over the world and do all kinds of difficult things? He has a right to say, for that, Hashem, I don't have to do it. That's your job to make sure that I have enough food. Do you make birds and animals have to work too hard for their food? You didn't, so why do you make me work so hard? I don't have to take the job. And so the Chovas Halvavos says that there is a point that you say, you know, I can use the level of bitochon to choose which job I should take. In other words, don't become a roidef momoin. Right? Because when you become a roidef, you go beyond the line of bitochon. You know, being a roidef is described as having crossed over the line of bitochon. Now, there are exceptions to the rule. There are certain subjects within which we should act Chas v'shalom, as if there is no God, as if we are supposed to do everything. What are those things? So there is a concept, for instance, what about if, for instance, I see people fighting? What is the Torah idea of how do you deal with it? You say, listen, that's their business. So no point, you know. Maybe something will happen, who knows what can develop, so it's God's world, not mine. Are you allowed to say that? No, you shouldn't say it. You should act as if there is no God. As if Chas v'shalom, take the law into your own hands, do everything you can to bring peace to the world. What is that called? Rodef Shalom. It's interesting, why Rodef Shalom? Why is the analogy of Redifo used for Shalom? Because that's how we are describing the word redifo. Redifo means when you act beyond the level of bitochon. Don't have bitochon when it comes to shalom, like the Gemara describes. Aaron HaKohen would go to any extent possible to get people together. Right? Even if it would mean even twisting what's the truth exactly. You know, he would make up all kinds of things in order to bring shalom. What's the matter with Aaron? Why wasn't he about bitochon? Right? It's God's world. God will take care of his world. We have to take care of God's world. We'll take care of it. No, he didn't rely on Hashem. He took the law into his own hands. Because that is the exception of Shalom. When it comes to Shalom, right, we have a right to act without bitochon. And there's another subject, another thing that we are obligated to act as if, chas v'shalom, there is no God. In tzedakah, right? Can't say, oh, there's a poor man there, he's dying of hunger. God is a powerful God, he'll take care of it. Don't act as if, chas v'shalom, there is no bitochon. You provide for him, right? Don't rely on Hashem, you provide for him, right? And there's another subject. How about a judge, right? Who, again, we're going back to Din Merume, right? A judge who sees according to all the technical details of the case obviously is that A is correct, right? And the judge says to himself, my intuition tells me that A is wrong and B is right. But of course the case shows that A is right and not B, so what should I do? So the judge very easily, especially if he's a religious Jew, he will say, well, listen, I'll do my job. God will take care of it, you know, God can take care of justice, right? So he will punish A, he finds A is right. So Hashem will make sure that A will lose the money that I make and win, and B will, it's a problem for Hashem to rectify what I will do wrong. Meanwhile, I'll do my job. I'm following the laws of the Torah. Says the Torah, you can't rely on Hashem. You have no right to rely on Hashem. What word does the Torah use to express this idea that you're not allowed to rely on Bitochon when it comes to Tzedek? Tirdei. That's the meaning of the word Tirdei when it comes to Tzedek. Right? It's not just a word. It's not just an expression. It's an expression of a meaning. And it means any time that you have an obligation to go beyond the level of Bitochon. Yeah? Good.
When you have to destroy a sort of theory of idolship,
so the point is like, you see, whenever the Torah tells me clearly do this, it's not possible to talk about the Torah, right? Whenever the Torah tells me clearly, but in situations that there is a certain flexibility, like the technical details of the case are that A is right. Why should I bother with going beyond the technical details? Why? That's Tirdei. Or Sholei. My obligation is to make peace. But after all, I don't have to go to such an extent to bring Shalom Lo'olam. Yes, Tirdei. Right? Or Tzedokeh, which is related, of course, to Tzedek. Right? By Tzedokeh also, I'm supposed to act as if I have no Bitochon. Now, you're not allowed to establish a matzeva. Said Rashi, matzevas even achas leakriv leo. You are not allowed to put up a stone in order to bring korbanos in front of that stone. Afilu lashamayim, even if you're doing it for Hashem. Why, says Rashi, asher sonei, mizbeach avonim, mizbeach adomo, tzivolasoi. With many stones, yes, but I matzevo you put up and you bring on that one stone, you're not allowed to. Why? Because that's what the Knanim used to do. Even though by the Ovois we find by even Matsevo, by even Matsevo, by Avrom, by Yaakov, by even Matsevo we find. Achshav sono. But because now, since they use it for Avodezora, it's so new. So, there's a very famous question that's asked here. How do we understand this idea that the Torah prohibits Matsevo, not because it's absolutely wrong, because if it could be absolutely wrong, even the Ovois wouldn't have done it. Remember, the Ovois kept, according to our tradition, they kept Kol HaTorah Kula Shelemino. So if it would be absolutely wrong, they wouldn't have done it. So what must you say that Matsevo is essentially fine? Except that it became corrupted, the usage of a Matsevo became corrupted by at this point. Right? So, fine, what about if eventually the Knani will stop using the Matzevo? Then it will become kosher again. Right? It will become kosher again. So really there is a very important principle here. that somebody mentioned it concerning the Moreh Nebuchim in the Rambam. In the Moreh Nebuchim, we find a lot of reasons that the Rambam gives for mitzvahs. Even in the third chelik of the Moreh Nebuchim, we find that the Rambam gave just the reasons for mitzvahs. So you find, for instance, what is the reason for Bosor Becholov? Bosor Becholov, because the idol worshippers used to mix meat and milk in order to worship their idol, so therefore the Torah uttered it. Or Kilayim, right? Semer Pishtim, linen and wool, because the priests used to mix linen representing the plants and wool that represents the animal kingdom and mix it, so therefore the Torah prohibited. So, I mean, even in the early portion you say, Chas v'sholem aydu, how can the Rambam say such a thing? Does that mean that the laws of the Torah are only temporary, only as long as they use it? So how can it be that they have value, that the Torah laws are valid even after the reason disappeared? That was the very early time. You know, there are many things written against the Rambam in his Moreh Nebuchim by the Ashkenazim in France and in Germany. There was a tremendous anti-Rambam movement because and one of the reasons was for the Moreh Nebuchim. And why in the Moreh Nebuchim? The third chelik of the Moreh Nebuchim. That was one of the biggest tainis against the Rambam. But so we won't go into it really, but really what the Rambam means simply, I mean in a very simple form, the Rambam of course says like this: once the Torah establishes it, right, in Har Sinai, it becomes a pact between Hashem and the Jewish people. Once it becomes established, it becomes established forever. Otherwise, it's not a pact. A bris has to be a bris oilom. Now, eternity is an essential part of a pact. Otherwise, it's not a pact. Right? Eternity. Okay? Therefore, even though, according to the Rambam, the form that Torah took at the time of Sinai was affected by the behavior of other nations, according to the Rambam, even assuming that that's what the Rambam means, that Hashem accepted the behavior of other nations as a sign that it was wrong, and therefore he established Torah laws to fit into the society that the Torah was given. But once it is given, of course, there is something eternal about Torah, so of course it can be changed. Really, the real pshat in the Rambam is much deeper than this, but obviously the Rambam meant it to be understood even in a superficial level. That was the main purpose of the Rambam, to write the Moreh Nebuchim that should be understood even by people who had no real insight into Torah. Even if their insights were Greek, right? Their concepts were Greek, they can also accept Torah. You know, I mean, that was the point of the Rambam. The Rambam wanted to make sure that everybody can accept Torah. Even a Jew who is an intellectual that only had only studied Greek philosophy, and he can't accept anything outside, they can't accept things that don't fit into Greek concepts, even such a Jew can accept Torah. That was the purpose of the Moreh Nebuchim.
Are you saying that all those Aristotelian concepts he brought in there, he didn't really hold by those?
He didn't hold. I mean, I can't say that he didn't hold, but that all those concepts were used as instruments to reach a certain type of a Jew that couldn't have been reached otherwise.
But it seemed to, you know, the way that the Moreh Nebuchim is written, it seemed to suggest that he really held by a lot of those things.
Of course he held it. You see, the Moreh Nebuchim is a method. You see, there are two parts in the Moreh Nebuchim. It's an important subject, even though it's not mamish part of the Shavua. Moreh Nebuchim has an essence, right? The essence behind the method, and there is a method besides the essence, right? The method is using concepts that are widespread in this generation, right? The same way that you find like someone who is a Torah Jew who uses modern concepts. Does he believe in those concepts? What do you mean believe? He uses it as a method, as an instrument to express the truth of the Torah, which means like this. The Moreh Nebuchim, the essence of the Moreh Nebuchim is as MS as the Yad HaChazokah. Same thing. As a matter of fact, you have the Meshech Chokmah, a statement. Kol ma shekosu b'Moreh Nebuchim, ubekol ma shekosu b'Yad HaChazokah, ruach echos lohem. They're interesting, it is. It's all the same, says the Meshech Chokmah concerning meaning. Not as people think that the Moreh Nebuchim, the Rambam didn't believe in. as you find, by Gedolim, you find that some sofer saying such a thing. It's an incredible thing. He says, well, you know that my Rambam, he says, the Rambam wrote the Moira Nebuchim to only for those Jews that were, far away from Torah Judaism, so therefore you can't really accept that as an expression of the Rambam's opinion. The Meshech Chochmah, Reb Meir Simche, obviously is arguing with Chassam Sofer, and he holds that whatever he says in the Moira Nebuchim is 100% true. Of course,